Gather around, friends. It is, in fact, that time again. It is Friday, which means it is the wrestling podcast time as we extend the hand to you once again, inviting you to join us on this, the Wrestling Bifrost, as we traverse this realm, looking for new thoughts, new aspects, new emotions to be derived from this wonderful thing we call professional wrestling. We're after new flavors, people. We want something fresh, something dynamic. And this episode, we're getting just that, as we're heading over to Japan to learn all about Ice Ribbon from the wonderful Yappy. So much in store for this episode. You are absolutely here on the Wrestling Podcast. That's WRSTLING. It's all of the graps without the E. But of course, me and G, we're not anti-E. We are simply pro wrestling. My name is Liam. This guy is Gareth.
Hey.
And you, my friends, are, of course, on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. Thank you so much for joining us, giving us your time, as always. Really fun-filled show for you this week. And, oh, man, I'm just almost out of breath because it has been a busy, busy week. A big, huge week in Japan. I mean, just a handful of shows. Of course, we had the new beginning in Hiroshima Nights 1 and 2 for New Japan, Choco Pro 89 and 90 in the end of Season 5. So you might also have seen our Choco Bouquet as a little thank you to Emmy, May and Balianaki for coming on last week. What wonderful folks they were for our bonus episode. If you haven't listened to that, get the hell on it. It's a really fun chat. Also, Tokyo Yoshi Pro's Positive Change show, Pro Wrestling Noah's back at the Budokan, and of course the show that we covered for this here episode, DDT's Kawasaki Strong. Oh, and just the small matter of the AEW Women's Eliminator Tournament from Japan. God, I am brave. I need to get some ice or something, Gareth. Take over, please.
I think you deserve a medal if you managed to watch every one of those shows. Do write in if you did. I didn't quite manage it. I think I got about 75-80% of all of that. But even still, whew, it's a lot of wrestling.
I would say that's a sterling effort, in fact. So go on, give us a brief overview. What did you watch?
So I watched New Beginning in Hiroshima Night 1. Mm-hmm. Both the Choco Pro shows. The second half of Noah with the English commentary that was on DDT Universe. Wrestle Universe. And I watched all of DDT's Kawasaki Strong.
Not bad at all.
Oh, and obviously I watched and live tweeted the women's side of the opening round of the AEW Women's Title Eliminator Tournament. And I have all the intention in the world of going back still and watching Positive Chain. And I may just cherry pick the best matches from New Japan. We shall see. But my goal is to have sort of seen more or less everything from this last weekend.
Man, yeah, quite the effort indeed. So yeah, as Gareth said, if you did manage to watch all of those shows, then tweet us and let us know and we will find a way of applauding you for your services to professional wrestling. Okay, right, let's move quickly on.
We'll tweet you a gold star at the very least.
Well, yeah, I think that's the absolute least we could do. We could do that. All right, okay, so DDT's Kawasaki Strong is where we belong this week. Big show they've been building up to pretty much since the beginning of the year. G Money, let's just jump right into it. What did you make of this one?
I liked it a lot. An imperfect show, a bit wonky, the sort of the first half. But the second, when they came back from intermission, the final three matches, I thought all delivered and then some.
Yeah, okay, right. Well, let's start at the top and work our way back, as we often like to do. So the main event for this one was Tetsuya Endo defending his KOD Openweight Championship against the legendary Jun Akiyama. And I say that because literally every time I write an article about Jun Akiyama on ITIWrestling.com, I always end up putting the legendary Jun Akiyama. So that's just become his prefix. Right. Anywho, so yeah, what did you make of this match? This was a half an hour match.
Yes. Really, really strong match here. Jun Akiyama can sure as hell, you know, still go like the clappers. Mm. I thought it was an interesting contest. You've got big heavyweight in Akiyama versus a more sort of a smaller guy in Endo. And I just really enjoyed the styles clash between them.
Yeah, me too. I thought the story of the match really was that Akiyama was a little too cute for Endo and had an answer for pretty much everything that he wanted to throw at him, you know, even to the point where, you know, when Damnation briefly got involved, Endo Stable, it didn't really turn the tide that much. And although I don't necessarily think Endo loses anything in defeat, I don't feel like once I started watching the match that the result was ever in question.
Yeah, it felt kind of inevitable, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, big shouts to everybody that got involved with our poll. Crazy numbers on that one, so thank you very much for playing along. We'll do more of
this. It was real close as well, wasn't it?
It was real close, yeah, absolutely. That was good fun.
But yeah, it definitely felt like the sword of Damocles was hanging over poor old Endo, and it was just it was just a matter of time for him. Akiyama had his weapons of choice, the knees, the exploders, and it's just a series of those throughout the course of the match just kind of did him in. The one time it felt like Endo really got some sustained offense, was attacking Akiyama's knees, working over him on the outside. But yeah, it just was kind of never enough. And then I think it was a missed shooting star press precipitated the downfall of Endo. After that, that was it, really.
Yeah, so an interesting one there. We asked the question about the Noah result, which we may touch on in a minute. Obviously, Keiji Muto arguably upsetting, I think, Go Shizaki to win the GHC heavyweight title just 24 hours prior. And it was interesting kind of gauging the response to that. I think most people were kind of the opinion that there's a longer term plan in place and it's ultimately going to be something that's good for business. And I think as much as anything, there were people that were disappointed that Go lost, but were kind of equally happy that he might now get a rest.
Yeah.
But, there were a few dissenting voices where the decision didn't go well. Now, I'd be intrigued to get your views on this one, though. Obviously, Endo has been the champion since, I think, the middle of last year. Is a very good figurehead for the company, in my opinion. I think he looks the part, and he certainly wrestles that way. So, Jun Akiyama taking the belt from him, where do you stand?
I like it. I think it's a big change for DDT. You think Akiyama's got that shine of being a mainstream wrestler in Japan. He's still a pretty big deal. It maybe gets some new eyes on DDT there. He can still go. I think he's got a lot of interesting matchups. It's basically now who can dethrone Akiyama.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's champion atop the mountain. And I'm just interested in a series of people trying to take him down and sort of seeing who's the one to succeed.
Yeah.
My heart says it should be our pal.
Our buddy.
Our bud. Takeshita.
The main man, Takeshita man.
I think especially after the couple of really great matches that they've had where Akiyama has been the man both times, I believe.
Yeah, for sure.
It feels like a natural build that maybe on attempt 3 and for the belt, Takeshita's able to do it.
Yeah, that feels like the end of the story for me. Mm. So yeah, I'd be really up for seeing that. How do you compare this one with the Go and Muto match?
There's some similarities in that you've got two 50-year-old bold dudes that are legends in the sport that are beating the younger men for the belts. Otherwise it's almost apples to oranges. Beyond those similarities between the men that claim the titles, I think Muto winning, in a flash pin, I think is very different to the very inevitable defeat of Endo here. He just kind of, it's not steamrolling Endo. Every minute was a step closer to his loss. Whereas
it felt like it, yeah.
The Noah, the GHC title clash, it felt like the tide was very much in Go's favour. It was his to lose in that instance.
Yeah, and I think sort of within the structure of that match, the way that his legs were worked upon by a real specialist in that particular form of body part manipulation, that kind of flash pin actually worked quite well. Mm. That he didn't have the juice to kick out of it, and it was a jumping hurricanrana, which I don't think you would necessarily normally associate with a big title change, but I think it worked here.
I really liked it.
Yeah, same. But I think it worked more in the context of Go's entire title reign,
yes,
which
absolutely
has been brutal, And
if you took this title change out of context, it'd be very easy to shit on it and be like, oh, Jesus, why are you putting this belt on a you know, 58-year-old Keiji Muto, but yeah, you know, in isolation. But yeah, I think in the wider context of what's going on, I think it is an interesting move.
Yeah, me too. And I think watching that, you know, the impression that I was left with was that a fully fit Go Shizaki beats a fully fit Keiji Muto at this stage in their respective careers.
Oh, yeah, 100% of the time.
I don't necessarily feel that way about the Endo.
No.
Akiyama. Like, I feel that Endo needs to, he has to go away and find something different to return with. Do you know what I mean? He needs a new tool or a new look or something. But I felt like Go was probably on his way to winning, and then all of a sudden, the year he'd had just caught up with him.
All of a sudden, the weight of carrying Noah on his broad shoulders, you know, visibly destroyed shoulders for a year in through the pandemic, it finally caught up with him.
The other thing, and I appreciate we're sort of lingering on Noah here when we should be talking about DDT, but just it's quite an interesting little comparison. But one thing I did think about that match as well, which really didn't go in Go's favour from a storyline perspective, is that he's not a knockout artist as such. He's very much like an accumulation fighter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, had he been more, like, let's say he had a Rainmaker in his locker, then he probably puts Muto away a fair bit earlier. But he's not that guy. You know, he's got the Go Flasher, but it's not so much a finisher at this point. He really kind of grinds people down and eventually wins after a series of lariats. If you're in a position where you're heavily compromised, you're in trouble. So I think, you know, all elements of his story pointed towards him losing when you look back at it with the benefit in hindsight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that, depending on your perspective, Kenta Kobashi is either a terrible bad luck or is your good luck charm.
Yeah, or he's a god-awful coach. You know, he's trying to help Endo out and no, absolutely not. It's really nice to see him on screen though, wasn't it?
It was, you know, yeah.
Both times.
He always just looks really happy to be there, wherever he is.
Yeah. Gosh, he was a bad, bad man back in the day, wasn't he? Do you remember I always think of that match with Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor.
Just one of my all-time faves.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember him wrestling Loki at that point where I felt like Loki was the scariest man in the world, and he was chopping him around. And it was watching the scales fall from your eyes. Like, oh, okay, this is a human being after all. Not necessarily Kobashi. Don't know what he is. He's a Super Saiyan or something, but yeah.
A wrestling deity.
I would say so, yeah. All right, cool. Right, let's get back over to DDT then. So, yeah, fresh champions, and it was actually announced on the joint press conference that both Akiyama and Muto had signed deals with DDT and Noah respectively. So Akiyama is signed up officially for 1 year, and I think Muto's there for two, taking them up to his 60th birthday. There's actually an article on that on itrwrestling.com if you want some quotes and some juicy bits. But yeah, interesting stuff. And like I said, gee, I'm pulling for Takeshita to be the guy to upset Akiyama, maybe towards the end of the year, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, good stuff there, I thought.
Yeah, me too. It was good stuff. But it wasn't my favourite match of the night. My favourite match of the night was the DDT Universal title match, which contained a man who's quickly becoming one of my most anticipated wrestlers. When I see Yuki Ueno's name on the card, I'm already thinking this is going to be good. I'm excited for this. And I love how his DDT Universal title run thus far has the sort of feel of a John Cena US title open challenge or a Cody Rhodes TNT. You know, there's just a new contender every month or every show. We get a little bit of build up and we get a big, you know, high quality match, and then we move on. And I thought this was an absolutely stonking match against Yukio Sakaguchi, who's one half of the tag champs with Eruption. Just an absolute belter. I love this match.
It was very, very good.
I watched this match thinking, I'm going to be thinking about this match at the end of the year when we do the Wrestling 21.
Yes.
I'll be amazed if this isn't on it, because this is a quality match.
This should be a reminder to us both that we started 2021 going, oh, we must make a spreadsheet to list all of our favourite matches of the year. So we must, after this.
Yeah.
We must start listing them just to make the end, you know, when it comes to the end of the year and we have to reminisce about what have we really enjoyed this year, we've got a handy go-to.
Yeah, 100%.
Sakaguchi, I just think, kick so much ass. Eruption are just the coolest.
They are the coolest.
Really, really love seeing them in any kind of combination. Yeah, and like you say, Ueno is just, I think, getting better and better all the time.
Yeah, he really, that's what's exciting, isn't it? And I think he's such a nice blend of fire and vulnerability, you know, and sort of as a sort of story, that there's so many places you can go with that.
Definitely.
You know, it's really exciting. But yeah, that's the main thing, is that he feels like he's got plenty of kind of upward mobility left. You know, there's loads of places where he can go and he can develop, and we're not seeing him in his final form yet, you know.
I really like as well that he is somebody who is very beatable, like a beatable champ, which I think often makes title defenses, you know, it gets you on the edge of your seat if you're like, oh god, you know, almost anybody could potentially wrestle this away from him. And I think especially in this match, they did a good job of convincing me that Sakaguchi could do it. You know, they showed the highlights of him repeatedly being choked out by Sakaguchi in the past and just told a really nice story. I thought this match just felt really violent.
Yes.
That was my takeaway. Like, Sakaguchi, like, everything he did just felt more violent than anywhere else, than anything else on the card.
Yeah, so as I understand it, he does have a very real background in several different martial arts, and I thought his strikes really stood out. They were absolutely on point. But if you'll indulge me for a minute, my favourite part of this match was, and it's only possible if you've got someone in there who has a background in this sort of thing, was the ending. Because sometimes when things get a little bit MMA, I start hearing MMA commentary in my head, you know, like, because you can sometimes see people not doing something. And, you know, the first thing that happened, it was really just an exchange of rear naked chokes or sleeper holds. They were sleeper holds, really. They were both trying to get that. And the first time that Sakaguchi attempted it, Ueno was fighting the hands. And that's what you're supposed to do. You know, you see wrestlers go for the biceps so often. You really should be fighting the hands. That's what they always tell you to do. And they were reversing that. But in his haste, Ueno was forever just trying to lock on his own sleeper hold without getting his body in the right place. It was always submission over position is what they refer to it as in the UFC. You know, you're trying to do it without kind of getting the groundwork in place. And then when he finally got it locked on, he had the triangle body lock, which, look, you know, as a jiu-jitsu fan, that just appeals to my heart, because it's a right pain in the ass to get out of. And it's probably the ideal body lock, in my humble opinion, for a rear naked choke or a sleeper hold. And I just thought, as you said earlier, it felt violent. It felt very real. I just thought it was expertly done. As soon as it finished, I was just like, I did a little clap. I'm not going to lie. I was in my kitchen. I was watching it. I just gave a little clap. I thought it was excellent stuff.
I think a real top match.
Top draw match. Right. Something I wanted to ask you, though. Ueno, in the press conference, he was the only guy that left without a dance partner for the next show. Mm-hmm. He kind of said, I don't really mind who I'm fighting next, which, if we're going to make some UFC comparisons, is always the most annoying thing for anybody who's one to say, call somebody out, man, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
But yeah, so who would you like to see him up against next?
That's a tough one. I'm just trying to think, like, who's coming off a win here that might be fun. Maybe Shunma?
Ooh, okay, yeah, that's a great shout. That is a really good shout, actually.
Might be good fun. There's heaps of people that I think could. I'd even really like to see Sakaguchi's stablemate get a go in, but not in maybe the one you're thinking of, who is challenging Akiyama.
Oh, very good.
But the third member of Eruption.
Yes.
Sakiaki.
100%. 100%. Book that. That's a great match. Absolutely. I love that. So I was thinking something intergender, and I think Sakiaki makes perfect sense. I had three others.
Okay.
So
hit me.
Charisma, you know, Daisuke Sasaki.
Yep.
I thought would be good.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Endo.
Yeah.
Pissed off. There's already a challenger in for Akiyama. Wants a belt.
Yeah.
But maybe not kind of operating at 100% of his faculties. Sure. So, you know, there's a way for Ueno to win. And if we're able to go full Tony Khan and just eliminate borders, how about our man Balianaki?
Yeah, that's a absolutely. Big match. That'd be a good match, yeah.
There you go. Possibilities are endless. Right. Anyway, let's move on. Anything else in the card you wanted to touch upon?
I really enjoyed the big eight-man tag between All Out and Damnation.
Okay, yeah.
That was just like a lot of fun. And there was the two big boys, the big beefy boys in this match, who I hadn't really seen. I don't think I'd seen either before, or don't really recall seeing either before.
And they are big boys.
They were great. Like, yeah. I can't wait. Yeah, my understanding is that there's a singles match coming down the road between those two, which
I'm
looking forward to.
Oh man!
So yeah. You know, time will tell for that one. Yeah, and it was just, you know, I think both teams, it's just fun seeing them work together. They're good stables, All Out and Damnation. So yeah. You know, and as far as big multi-man matches, you know, big eight-man tag matches go, you know, this is up there as a real strong one. Everybody played their part really well, and yeah, it delivered.
Yeah.
I think you do get a lot of these big interfaction tag team matches, and they just kind of can kind of lose all meaning. You know, New Japan just run them all the time into the ground, where you just kind of don't care anymore almost.
But it just doesn't feel like there's
any stakes.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it feels more important here, and yeah, it was a good match. Yeah. I liked that. And then for me, the other match on the card that I would definitely recommend going out of your way to watch, just because it was super entertaining and is actually on YouTube for free, is the six-man tag between Chris Brooks, Maki Ito, Super Delphin against Nakamura, Mao, and Mayumi.
Yeah, allow me to second that. That was a really quality affair. And just, that was pure theatre.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff with Maki Ito and Super Delphin. For,
it was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was so much fun. So basically, if you haven't seen it yet, they were just miscommunicating, to say the least. But it was, you know, real sort of slapstick.
Just really good comedy.
It was theatre. It was real theatre. And it was one of these matches as well, and there's been a few recently, that made me really pine for watching some live wrestling. Because
mm-hmm.
This felt like the sort of thing that you might see on an indie show, where there's lots of good action, but there's a lot of comedy for the crowd to get involved with as well. And
the action's almost secondary to the fun that's going on. But
yeah,
the thing I wanted to kind of compare this against was the other kind of comedy match of the night, which, you know, usually DDT comedy is knocked out of the park for me, but the eight-man tag team title match that they had earlier on in the show, which, like, the so much of the action was based around Dino butt stuff, and it just didn't really click for me. Like, I just, yeah, the kind of conceit of the comedy that they were doing just didn't work for me, and so it just kind of, this whole match just fell super, super flat for me. But, you know,
yeah,
can't win them all, I guess.
That's the thing, isn't it? Particularly with comedy, it's so hard, and, you know, more often than not, they do a sterling job with,
yeah,
it. But yeah, I don't disagree.
For example, like the tax write-off match from the
last
show we reviewed, that, like, absolutely killed it for me.
Yeah, for sure. Wonderful stuff.
So, you know, that's the thing, like, where I think, with DDT, when the comedy hits for me, it hits hard. But, like, when it's a swing and a miss, it's a real bummer, because I really want to love the comedy.
Yeah, and I think as well, you have to, it's one of the reasons why you have to tip your cap to DDT, because comedy is one of the more tricky elements of any type of performance, I think. And the fact that they, you know, they're known for it, and they specialize in it, and, you know, they're sort of implored to do it on a show-by-show basis, you know, that's not easy. And I think they should be applauded for, you know, taking the risk every time, and they do good stuff. So, yeah, fair enough. Not one for this show, but by and large, they nail it.
I think, you know, as a whole, this show was a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Hunt down the top two matches for sure.
Oh, do. Yeah. In fact, you don't need to go too far for the Akiyama Endo one, because that one is also on YouTube, so how about we just go ahead and put those two matches that are on YouTube that we mentioned on the Wrestling Pod Twitter account, which is at Wrestling Pod Wrestling About the E, so you can just check them out at your leisure there. So that's Kawasaki Strong in the books. Look, man, it's no secret at this point that G and I love us some DDT, so no doubt we'll be back soon, but in the meantime, we move. All right, folks, we are back in your eardrums, and we've got a very exciting guest. Now, one of the big critiques I think we get from our listenership is that we just don't do enough stuff about the Yoshis. So we thought, you're right, guys, you're right. So we've gone out and we found ourselves another Yoshi promotion to get involved with. This time we're going to be looking at Ice Ribbon, really excited with that. And we've got Yappy, who's going to be chatting us through the history of Ice Ribbon, also talking to us about her career. It's absolutely fascinating stuff, to be honest with you. It really was riveting having this conversation.
We've been really lucky chatting to people that have taken such interesting routes into wrestling.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, we won't spoil anything. Let's just get straight into it. But this is The Wrestling Podcast speaks to Yappy from Ice Ribbon. Do enjoy.
And we're back. And we're joined now by Yappy from Ice Ribbon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So we are really interested in hearing all about sort of your experiences and all about Ice Ribbon and then the upcoming event this weekend. But so I think first of all, we're going to jump right in. How did you get into wrestling?
How did I get into wrestling? It's a long story spanning like maybe 35 years ago when I was still a child. My family, my brother was a big WWE fan. But I wasn't so into it. I'm like, what are these all, you know, big sweaty guys like bumping into each other? But I would be forced into it because, you know, I'm just having my little quiet tea party. And then suddenly my brother comes into the room, suplex! And then I suddenly my head is like under my feet and I'm like upside down in the mattress. I'm like, what happened? You know, and then my parents, though, they started watching Glow, the original Glow, the 80s Glow. And then I'm like, oh my God, these girls are so cute and they're fighting like my brother's men are. And then the entire family actually loved it. And it would be like a family event. We would all go to my parents' room and watch Glow together. And that's when wrestling actually started interesting.
Amazing.
And then so my brother would go suplex and I would go, yeah! And that was that. You know, growing up between two brothers, yeah, older brother and younger brother, you do have to physically fend for yourself once in a while. So, you know, sibling survival skills. Yeah. And then, you know, the interest comes and goes. And then maybe like 10 years ago, I got interested in it again. I was living in China at the time. And, you know, I was thinking like, oh my God, I wish I could go to Japan and, you know, watch wrestling. And I wonder if I can actually be a wrestler, but I never thought it could actually happen. And just that seemed like, you know, it was the same as wanting to be an astronaut. Like you want it to happen, but it never will. And so when I was in Japan, my friend took me to my first Joshi show. And that was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And there was actually a Filipina wrestler in that show, and I was like, what, even Filipinos can get into this, you know? But you know, they're all doing like flippy stuff. They're like, yeah, no, I can't do that. So I thought I'll just be a fan. But then there were two ex Ice Ribbon wrestlers in that show. It was Makoto and Aokizuki, and I thought they were really great. And my friend said, oh yeah, they used to be with this promotion called Ice Ribbon. And I started looking up Ice Ribbon. And then I started enjoying their shows just from YouTube and wherever. And then my friend said, you know, they have a wrestling circle. And it's like, it's not to be a wrestler. It's just a casual class. And it's like, okay, so because other promotions, you know, you go in there, I want to be a wrestler and it's an audition and it's so much pressure. I feel like everyone's judging you. But Ice Ribbon has a wrestling circle where everyone's welcome. No previous sports experience necessary. Any age can come. And they're like, you know, maybe you can just go there, try a few bumps, try a few moves and, you know, meet the wrestlers and train with them. So I did that. I entered. And little did I know that this is how you snipe wrestlers from the general population. Because a lot of people are too intimidated to come to any dojo and say, I want to be a wrestler. But Aisha was like, no, you don't have to be a wrestler. Just have fun with us. And if they see, you know, if you see they have potential, they're like, so what do you think about debuting?
Amazing.
This is a scouting program, isn't it?
That's so sneaky.
Backdoor you into wrestling.
Kind of sneaky, but I'm glad they did it.
Interesting. So you've clearly traveled around a little bit. Am I right in thinking you're originally from the Philippines?
Yes, I am.
Is there much of a wrestling scene there?
The funny thing is the wrestling scene, the Philippines first, I mean, there used to be a promotion long, long ago, but it's not really like, it's like a cable channel like at night and hardly anyone knows about it. But the actual wrestling scene in the Philippines happened a year after I left the Philippines.
Of course.
Oh, no way.
Typical, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm like, what? If you guys just started a little bit earlier, maybe I would have stayed. But yeah. But oh, it has grown now. Like, I think now there are three wrestling promotions in the Philippines, three or four.
Interesting.
And I mean, right now, because of COVID, you know, everything's paused. But before COVID, like, they were really growing. And, you know, like, it, within the how many, the short years that they've been around, they've grown leaps and bounds, so I'm kind of proud of them.
That's very cool. All right, we'll have to look into that, because we try and cover, you know, wrestling from lots of different countries on the show, so we'll have to and scout some of those. That sounds good.
I think that's one of the most exciting things about doing this, is it's really opened our eyes to promotions that maybe we haven't looked at before as fans, because we're sort of doing it with through a more kind of critical lens. We're like, oh, let's have a little look at wrestling from here. Mm-hmm. And I think so far we've just been everything's knocked our socks off pretty much.
Yeah. Like the Southeast Asian wrestling scene is like growing, you know, every year. So it's worth checking out, I think.
Excellent. I think the only promotion that was on my radar sort of prior to this conversation was is it Singapore Pro? Have some good guys and girls that I've heard of. So I was very keen to look at those at some point. Do you think you'll go back and sort of tour some of those promotions at some stage?
Well, who knows? I'm a bit shy going to other promotions, actually. Wow. But I mean, you know, if Ice Ribbon says, yeah, go, I'm like, okay, I'll go. But like, I'm friends with Singapore Pro Wrestling's Alexis Lee. Mm-hmm. So I think she was the first female pro wrestler in Singapore.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so sometimes we'd talk and, you know, she'd be like, yeah, come to Singapore. And I'm like, no, come to Japan. It's like, let's both go to Korea. So, you know, we talk about it.
I've definitely had experience of sort of seeing how popular sort of wrestling is in that region. When I was backpacking, when I was in Malaysia, when I was in Kuala Lumpur, I got the chance to go to a WWE show when they were in town, and just people were crazy for it. It was so good. Like, I felt really lucky to sort of just happen to be in the right place at the right time for a big show like that.
Yeah, definitely. Like WWE, like WF, actually. It was E at the time. Already. So WWE also does shows in the Philippines. So I used to go to them with my brother. So, and my brother, you know, he's a big wrestling fan. And when I called him up and I say, bro, guess what I'm going to be doing starting next year? It's like, what? I'm going to be a pro wrestler.
Amazing.
And he just went quiet. He's like, are you okay? Are you okay? And I, suddenly he's like,
yeah.
I'm so happy. He was just like bawling on the phone. He's like, I wanted to be the wrestler, but now my little sister's the wrestler. And now his Instagram is like full of pictures of me. So
amazing.
He's very proud then, by the sounds of things.
He's super proud. His Instagram profile says, brother of wrestler Yappy.
So. Very cool. Yeah. Do you remember when he came to see you wrestle live for the first time?
He hasn't seen me wrestle live yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because he would visit me in Japan, but then he hasn't been to Japan since I debuted, and then COVID happened, so he couldn't come. So yeah, we're just waiting for this pandemic to end.
I'm sure that'll be a lot of fun when that does happen. That'll be a nice moment for everybody, I think. So how long have you been in Japan then?
I've actually been, I think this is my eighth year in Japan. Hmm. Although my wrestling career is still very short. So.
And so how have you found living there? Is it a lot different to life in the Philippines?
Oh yeah, way different. Of course, you know, at some point, whenever you move to a new country, you have this honeymoon stage where everything is perfect and wonderful, and and then you start, you know, like, oh, okay, this is real life. It has its challenges, but overall, I do think I enjoy life here better than back home, just because of the way I am. So I'm really careless. Like, I'm the kind of person who will, like, walk away from her wallet and forget it's there for 30 minutes. Like, oh, all right. But, you know, in Japan, you do that and, oh, my wallet's still here. You know, people use their car keys to save their places at, you know, like, pachinko parlors and stuff.
Really?
And sometimes you use your smartphone to save your place at the food court. So,
wow.
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, that will never happen to Philippines. The Philippines, I put my phone down, I look away, and it's gone. So,
I think over here, if I think about putting my phone down, it will be gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's perfect for someone like me, who's like always, yeah.
Amazing. So what's prompted all your travel? Because you said you lived in China as well for a while, and you're obviously now living in Japan for...
I don't know, I guess like... It's just the way that I am. I'm, what is that? It's like, I just never really feel deeply rooted anywhere. Like, I'm kind of like a dandelion. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, there's an opportunity in China. All right, I'll go there. And then, you know, it's like, oh, you know, my, it happened before that I was in a relationship with a person, but it was long distance. And they're like, you know what? How about we move to Japan? I'm like, all right, when? In 6 months. Okay, sure. Let me get my paperwork together. You know? I'm just like, sure, let's go here, sure. You know, I'm not really like, oh, but my job, or mm-hmm. Oh, it's like, I'm almost like, I'll find a new job there, I'll get new friends there, we have Facebook now, I can keep in touch with my old friends, you know.
I completely
thanks to the
that.
internet.
Yeah, that's a nice way to live. That's not dissimilar to your attitude to life, is it, Gareth?
Absolutely.
To be fair, when you were saying that, Yappy, I was just thinking, I know somebody just like that, actually. Yeah,
I moved out to Australia for a year, and I sort of go backpacking for like a year at a time, and yeah, I don't really have deep roots either, so yeah, I completely understand that. Like, it's, you know, it feels like you're a kindred spirit.
Yeah, I mean, it also means I'll be single forever, but it doesn't matter, because that's actually good for pro wrestling.
Sure.
It like, in Japan, I don't know in other countries, but in Japan, it's better if you're single.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's something like, do you know the idol culture in Japan, where
yes.
The idol girls are not allowed to have boyfriends and stuff. So wrestling culture in Japan can be sometimes a little bit similar. I remember once, I think one of our wrestlers, Risa Serra, she's now married to another wrestler named Orca Uto. And she was saying that the moment she announced her engagement to Orca Uto, her popularity immediately went down.
Oh, wow. Okay. That is interesting.
Yeah. So it is better if you're single.
Or at least having the appearance of availability, I guess.
Yeah, kind of, I suppose. And I'm like, I don't need an appearance. I'll be single. Yeah. No qualms about that.
More time to wrestle and more time to draw.
Exactly. And more time to play games. It's only so many hours in a day.
This is it. How have you found learning the language in Japan?
I actually started learning it in 1995.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, when I was in high school. One day I got interested in Japan, and at the time we didn't have stuff like Duolingo or anything, so I picked up a textbook and started learning through a textbook by myself. And in the year 2000, I went to Japan for 3 months to study Japanese, and I just kept like trying to do things that'll keep me, you know, keep my language, my knowledge of the language retained. So when I moved here 7 years ago, eight years ago, I actually already had a foundation.
Amazing.
But the thing is, like, Japanese sports culture is very, very strict in the sense that you have to speak a certain way to your senpais, so to people who are higher ranked than you. So it's like, oh, my Japanese is actually not good enough for wrestling. You know, it's, like, example, let's say the word for because is dakara. But if I'm talking to my senpais, I don't say dakara. I have to say nanode, which is a more polite form of because.
Gosh.
And so, like, there are certain speech patterns that you have to follow. There are certain ways of speaking that you have to follow. And it's like, oh my God, it's a completely new language. So,
yeah, that sounds like a real challenge. There's an awful lot to it then to consider going in.
All the formal versions of everything that you have to know. You know, you can't just know the kind of normal versions of words. You have to know all the formalized as well. Oof, tough.
Yeah, it is very much so.
And the thing is, because like I already had a foundation of the language, I already knew Japanese. So they were stricter than me than say, we have another foreigner in the roster and her Japanese is at beginner level. So they're very, very forgiving of her language abilities. But since like, Yappy, you already know Japanese, so you can level up. We expect a little more from you. I'm like, okay.
You don't get to just skate by.
Yep, nope.
Interesting. Okay, right, let's talk about your training. So how long did you train with Ice Ribbon before you debuted, and who was it that actually trained you?
So my training period was really long. Like maybe years before I came, some people, like when Ice Ribbon was trying to build up the roster, people would debut within a month, within 2 months, within 4 months. But by the time I came, they already had an established roster, so they can spend more time training the trainees until they're really ready. So my training period was a year and a half, which is actually fair considering that when I entered Ice Ribbon, I couldn't even run for 3 minutes. So actually, no, 3 minutes even stretching it. Like 1 minute was enough to kill me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never run in my life. I was never physical. I used to play roller derby, but still that's on skates, not on feet. So
that's so funny you mentioned roller derby, because when you talked about the backdoor training process, it reminded me of recreational league and backdooring skaters into roller derby teams. How they'd be like, oh, come and learn to skate with us, and then if you're promising, they're like, right, you're a blocker now, you're a jammer now.
Yeah, it's just, you know, tricking you into the business. But yeah, so it took a long time because I practically could not do anything when I came in. So like I am a completely different person physically than who I am when I first came here. But yeah, now normally it would be around, like training period would be around 1 year. Our newest rookie, she's about maybe over 2 years, I think, because she entered Ice Ribbon just a month after I did. And then she just debuted late last year. So,
Yeah,
it depends.
And what's the training process like? Is it quite intense, one assumes?
It can be, depending on which coach you get. Now is the best time to get in because it's like the hell coach is not there.
Yeah.
There is a coach that gives you nightmares from their training. But for me personally, what I experienced was like we had a coach who did like old school pro wrestling training, which means like 300 squats and then 156 lion push-ups. Like, 150 jumping jacks, 100 sit-ups, just like a lot of working out. And then there was we have a ring, so we have to like one pass is you run and back, that's one. So run and then charge and then run back to where you started, that's one pass. And you have to do 10 passes under 30 seconds. If you don't make it under 30 seconds, you can't debut.
Oh wow.
And as if this wasn't hard enough, before that, you have to do this thing where you have to jump and bring your leg up to the chair. So you're kind of jumping for 30 seconds and then you get to rest for 15 seconds and that's 7 sets. So by the time I'm done with those 7 sets of jumping on a chair, I could barely breathe. And then the coach is like, okay, and I run to the ring. I'm like, do it under 30 seconds.
So it's like your minimum skills test and your 25-5 for roller derby.
Pretty much. Well, it's called a pro test.
That's really interesting. Because I've always, one of my observations about Joshi wrestling since we've been covering it on the podcast is just how fast most Joshis are, you know, when they're running the ropes, etc. And I suppose what you're talking about there would, that's almost building up to being very quick in the ring and sort of hitting the ropes hard and fast. That's fascinating.
I am actually the slowest person in Ice Ribbon. So when I started at Ice Ribbon, running those 10 passes across the ring would take me like 32 seconds. So I could have debuted that time. Now I'm down to 27 seconds. But our fastest one can do it in 23. So
what?
Yes. So I am the slowest person in Ice Ribbon.
I reckon don't tell people you're so slow. Just say you're deliberate. Yes.
Now, the thing is, like, what my our main coach tells me, you don't have to be that fast because you're a power fighter.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to come to them. They come to you. They scoop them up and slam them. You don't have to move so much. You have your weight and your power behind you. So I'm like, okay. But I still want you to run under 30 seconds. Okay. But I still want you to try for 25 seconds. Okay. Lots of but.
So you're also an illustrator, we understand. I've seen you've got a Twitch channel. Do you get to put your illustration skills to good use, or is it just for fun?
Well, I mean, I used to work as an illustrator. I still do sometimes. Nowadays, I do make a little money on the side by drawing illustrations of the roster and then selling them to the fans. So
amazing.
So it's fun and it's lucrative. Best combination.
Absolutely.
I think sort of people really enjoy sort of good artwork of pro wrestling. Like there's a real market for it, I think.
Yeah. I was surprised too. Like, I'm glad there's a market for it. I didn't think there was. It's just I started doing the illustrations for fun, and then I would post them on Twitter and people were like, can I buy this? Can I buy this? I'm like, oh, people want to buy it. Oh, sure.
That's really nice.
That's real good. Obviously, you're sort of doing well at the moment, but what are your goals for wrestling? Do you sort of have anything you've kind of set yourself that you'd like to achieve?
Yeah, that's kind of hard for me because, you know, like a lot of the people in wrestling, they're like, you know, I want to be a champion. I want to do this and this. And for me, considering my age, like I debuted at 39, you know. So at that point, like a lot of pro wrestlers, especially women, female pro wrestlers, would retire at around age 30. You know, it's like, so I'm already older than a lot of wrestlers who have already retired. So for me, becoming a wrestler in itself was already a huge achievement.
Sure.
And then after that, we're like, oh, okay, now I'm a wrestler. Oh, okay. So now I have to think of more goals. But I guess, like, I would like to go for some belts, you know. Although as a foreigner, it's actually a little bit tougher to gain popularity in Japan. They just have a little bit of apprehension towards foreign wrestlers. Although I am in this weird limbo where I'm not quite foreign and I'm not quite Japanese to them, because a lot of the, you know, the foreign wrestlers in Japan, they're usually white, and their level of Japanese is usually at beginner level. So, you know, they're so foreign for the Japanese people. But I actually, like, if I shut up and don't say anything, people would usually think I'm Japanese. So this one, because I'm Asian and I speak Japanese, and I do speak it with a semi-natural intonation, they're like, she's foreign, but she's also very Japanese. And it's like, I'm in this weird limbo where people are like, yeah.
That's so interesting.
Why do you suppose there is that apprehension from fans?
I think a lot of fans, like, okay, Japanese people, I think as a society, they're a little bit introverted and they're quick to embarrassment. And so they're a little bit shy to approach something that's a bit unknown to them. And so, you know, it's like going past a comfort zone. It's like, oh, you know. But I mean, it's been getting better and better. Like, you know, the fans are like warming up more and more towards me.
That's great to hear.
That is good.
And then you mentioned as well, sort of a lot of Joshi wrestlers retire by about 30. Curious to know, sort of, is there a particular reason for that? Is it just wear and tear on the body, sort of, or is there another reason why the sort of age cutoff is such?
I think there are several reasons. For one, it could be the body. Like, I think a person's peak body conditions are from their teen years to their 20s. And, you know, at 30, arthritis starts setting in, you start getting the back pains, and, you know, you just look at something wrong and suddenly somewhere hurts. So, you know, it starts. And so that's one reason. Another reason is, you know, some people would like to start a family. And, you know, you can't wrestle pregnant. And but I mean, there are some wrestlers who have, like, there is a wrestler like Sakura Hirota from Wave Pro Wrestling has twins, and she brings her twins to matches. I had to babysit them once while she's out fighting. You know, I mean, it can happen, but, you know, it is a challenge, you know, having a family and being a wrestler. And another one is because, let's face it, Joshi Pro Wrestling's main fan base is composed of men, and men prefer younger women.
Gosh. It's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah. The difficult reality of it. I think that's also another reason why it's hard for me to get a lot of fans because of my age. Some wrestlers keep their ages secret, which maybe I should have. But I'm like, nah, I'm 40. Whatever, deal with it. I'm 40, but I still look younger than you, whatever.
Do you think that would be different? Like, say if you wrestled in the States, for example, do you think you'd face that sort of same issue, or do you think it would be sort of easier for people to get on side?
I actually have no idea. Like, my time in the States is pretty limited. Like, if you squish together all the times that I've been to the States, it would be a total of 4 months. So I can't really, you know, say for sure. Like, I don't have enough knowledge to answer that.
No, that's fair. Okay, I suppose we should crack on with some chat about Ice Ribbon, but one more question just on your career. When the pandemic kind of clears away and travel is open, do you have any plans to come and wrestle in the UK?
Well, if somebody would have me, it's all, you know, up to the promoters if they would like to bring me over.
Perfect, right. Promoters, you've heard it here first.
We'll pass that around.
We'll work on that. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Right, so Ice Ribbon then. So you know, we're completely new to Ice Ribbon. So perhaps you could give us a bit of a history as to how Ice Ribbon got started.
So Emi Sakura worked for a promotion called Gato Kyunya. But Gato Kyunan had a lot of young people on their roster, like some were like middle school age and high school age. And Gato Kyunan wanted them to grow more, like Emi Sakura wanted them to grow more. But there were only so many matches they would do, like maybe only 2 to 3 matches per month. So there was not a lot of room for the young ones to grow. So they started Ice Ribbon. And at the time, it wasn't even Joshi Pro Res Ice Ribbon. It was Pro Res Action Team Ice Ribbon. And because, you know, it costs a lot of money to do a wrestling show, you have to rent a venue, you have to rent a ring. So what she did is just more like a budget sub-brand. Like, they would rent a smaller space somewhere in some community center, and they would wrestle on a mat, not even a ring. But the main purpose was to give the younger wrestlers experience. And so they started doing that. And so Emi Sakura was the only veteran, or was the only like experienced wrestler in there. And the rest were like very young rookies. So that's how it started.
That's really interesting.
And then eventually Emi Sakura was no longer with Gato Kyunan. So then she started working with Ice Ribbon full-time. So then that's where it really started growing exponentially.
Interesting. Yeah, we actually had Emmy on last week talking about Choco Pro. So that ties in quite nicely. Okay, that's really interesting. Do you know if is there a story behind the name?
Oh, yeah. Well, Ice Ribbon, first a rumor, because like some people think that Ice Ribbon, I-C-E, stands for Innocent Candy's Evolution, because there is the tag, the Ice Cross 60 champion belt says Innocent Candy's Evolution. So they think, oh, that's where ice comes from. But actually, that was just something that one of the wrestlers at the time, Makoto, decided. Like, when that title started, she made a cardboard belt to represent the title. And then she's like, I want to put a meaning to ICE. So she's like, okay, this means Innocent Candy's Evolution, without even like consulting anybody. She's like, this is what ICE means now. And everyone's like, sure, let's roll with it. But the truth is, like, ICE, ice in Japanese would be spelled A-I-S-U, ISU. And so in English, we have the vowels A, E, I, O, U. But in Japanese, the vowels are A, E, U, I, O. So A starts ice is A because they want to be on top. They want to be the first. Like alphabetically, they always come first. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason of starting it with A. And then it's ice because they want to be cool.
Nice.
And so do you see how indie the beginning is? It's super indie.
Absolutely.
And then ribbon because they're girls and they're cute. Super indie beginnings.
You know, love that.
A cardboard belt. Sudden, like somebody, some random wrestler deciding a random meaning for ICE and ice and ribbon. So that's pretty much, there's no deep meaning. Like, let's not try to put any deep meanings into anything. It's just people having fun.
It's come a long way then. So who would you say are the kind of, for new fans, who are the kind of wrestlers you need to know in Ice Ribbon? Who are the people to look out for?
Well, our director is Tsukasa Fujimoto. So she's already on her 13th year of wrestling. So she entered Ice Ribbon with four other wrestlers, I think, because there was this movie, and it was a movie about pro wrestling, and it was her and Miyako Matsumoto. Yeah, and then there was like several girls, and then out of them, only three remain. And Tsuka's been working for Ice Ribbon, like, you know, for a long, long time, and now she's the director of Ice Ribbon. Very smooth worker. Maybe you've seen her on the on Twitter once because she wrestled Andreza the Giant Panda. And I think like gifs of that went all over Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And there is Yukihi Maya Yukihi, who is currently one of our more popular wrestlers too. So she used to be a banker and now she's a pro wrestler.
Wow.
And she is the leader of the unit Rebel and Enemy, which is her plus the Ice Ribbon's non-Ice Ribbon wrestler regulars. And we have Tsukushi. She debuted at Ice Ribbon when she was, I think, 12 years old.
Wow.
And now she is 23 years old.
Gosh.
But she's still as tall as a 12-year-old. But, you know, it's like when you look at her, she looks so cute, you know, in her little pink frilly skirt and everything. It's all sparkly and shining and spring. But if she flexes, you'll see she's made of rock. She is like rock hard muscles everywhere, but she's so tiny and cute. And, also she recently acquired a last name. So now she is Tsukushi Haruka. And we have Kurumi Hiragi, who is also the same level of veteran as Tsukushi. She also debuted along Tsukushi. So I think she debuted when she was like maybe 12 or, oh no, no. She's 20 years old now or 21. So yeah, very young.
Gosh.
So she's been a wrestler for about 10 years. So I guess she was 11 or so when she debuted.
Jeez.
So she started as, you know, a cute little girl from, you know, middle school. And now she's a, you know, big powerhouse wrestler, but does some amazing flips. So she's a big flippy girl. So, and we have Risa Serra, who is pretty much the deathmatch representative of Ice Ribbon. So she loves those, you know, shattering light tubes and breaking tables and thumbtacks and all that. And then there is the person who she inspired to get into pro wrestling, our prodigy, Suzu Suzuki. So Suzu Suzuki, like shot to stardom, like ever since her debut. Like she usually in Japan, a rookie never wins their debut match, but she won her debut match with a German suplex hold. So she is pretty much a prodigy. She can do pretty much anything the coaches throw at her. And without in Japanese pro wrestling, you are considered a rookie until you finish your 3 years of your career. Mm-hmm. And within her second year? I think it's her second year in her career. She already got the highest championship belt in Ice Ribbon.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. She just recently lost it to Tsukasa Fujimoto in her last Koraku and Hall show. Oh no, yeah, in her last Koraku and Hall show. Actually, she literally lost it before that. She literally lost it on the train. And then she figuratively loses it to Tsukasa.
I read about
yeah,
that.
I remember hearing
yeah,
about that.
I remember that. Interesting.
It's interesting what sort of makes it through. That's the kind of the news that hits us, the losing title belts on trains.
Literally losing title belt.
And everyone would have been too polite to have picked it up.
That's the thing, though, because this is Japan. We did expect it to come back.
Yeah.
It never came back.
No.
We filed police reports. We looked at CCTV cameras. We looked at lost and found, and it was nowhere to be found.
Wow. Okay. Gosh, that is interesting. All right. If anybody here is listening and they've got that belt, send it back, for goodness sake. Come on.
Yeah.
Someone's got a very expensive cummerbund just to wear at home now. Sad okay. news.
Right. That's fascinating. So that's who we need to look out for.
Yeah.
In terms of this, I think Japan is so unique in the sense that it has this Yoshi culture, and as a result of that, has so many different promotions that are all female. I think it's perhaps the only country in the world really that's like it. You know, you have a few in the States, and I can think of one, maybe two over here in the UK, but in Japan there's several. What would you say makes Ice Ribbon different to some of the other promotions in Japan?
Well, for one thing, our roster is almost made up entirely of people who are trained from the beginning by Ice Ribbon and debuted in Ice Ribbon. There are only two exceptions. That's Mio Shirai, and you might know her. She is Io Shirai's big sister. And Tekla from Austria. So she used to wrestle for World Underground Wrestling. So those are the only two people who have entered the Ice Ribbon roster without debuting from Ice Ribbon. So we all of our rosters start out from Ice Ribbon, and you know, there are a few who leave, but then there's nobody who comes in from another promotion. And also a lot of, or most Joshi promotions would accept new trainees from 15 to 25 years old. That's the age window that they allow. Ice Ribbon will take anybody at any age. So, which is why they took me. Yeah. I entered them when I was 37.
That's really cool.
And I debuted at 39. So, but then we currently have one who's a trainee hopeful. She's not an official trainee yet, but she's a trainee hopeful, and I think she's 12 years old.
Wow. My goodness.
You see these huge age gaps, but
it's wild. It's I find it really fascinating that how young some people in Japan start the sort of training process. And you know, you've got people who are fantastic at like age 16.
Well, mostly because I think a lot of female pro wrestlers, or pro wrestlers, you know, male or female, will start entering the wrestling world in their teens. Mm. I think it's very usual in Japan, because in Japan, legally, you only have to finish junior high school before you're allowed to like work and stop school and like live your life as an adult. Mm-hmm. Legally, you're not an adult until you're 20, but you can start earning money and start renting apartments as soon as you finish junior high school. So a lot of people will actually start a career after they finish junior high school. That's what Suzu Suzuki did.
Mm. And it just seems to be the wrestling training like pipeline is much more kind of formalized in Japan. Like people are much more aware of its existence, whereas I think in the UK and in the US and stuff, if you want to learn to be a wrestler, it's a little bit more, you're not really sure whether, you know, it's run by cowboys or, you know, whether it's legit. You know, there's a certain amount, it feels a lot more legitimate in the sort of the training process in Japan. Feels a lot more legitimate, a lot more structured.
I think it's because it's like because of the Japanese sports culture in general. Like even baseball or any sport, it's super structured.
It's really fascinating. I think, you know, it goes a long way to explaining, you know, how you have all these, you know, such a strong culture of amazing wrestlers in Japan, that the sort of training process is so much more legitimized, and you know, you have that level of coaching and training.
That's got to be it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. in terms of getting started with Ice Ribbon, and that's what we're doing this week, where would you suggest is a good place to jump in?
Let me see. Well, I guess story-wise, like Korakuen Hall is where a lot of stories begin or end. So Korakuen Hall shows, and also the there are like two major shows each year. One is Ribbon Mania, which is the year-ender show. So usually you would see like belts change, you know, hands in those shows. And also the biggest one is, it used to be Yokohama Cultural Gymnasium, but that was demolished. But so now the new big show is at Yokohama Budokan. So that's a replacement. But there's a big Yokohama show in the middle of the year. And there is the year-ender at Korakuen Hall. Those are the major ones where stories wrap up. But any Korakuen Hall show is a good jumping point. Okay. For people who are living in Japan and just, or, you know, just want to start casually, our dojo shows are very easy to consume because, you know, like the big shows, Korakuen Hall shows and Yokohama Budoka, Yokohama shows, they're, you know, there's a lot of like stories being wrapped up, a lot of emotion and a lot of like, you know, like main event type wrestling. But if you just want to get into it lightly, like, oh, so what's Ice Ribbon about? And, you know, what do they do? And who are the wrestlers? Any dojo show is very easy to consume.
Okay, that's really interesting. So we're jumping in at a reasonably good time on Saturday then. But I think we'll have to come back for the middle of the year show that you mentioned as well. And check that one out.
Definitely, please do.
For the people that are interested in watching, how do you go about watching Ice Ribbon? Where's the place to catch it?
Well, we have a streaming channel on Nico Nico. It's a Japanese service, so you might have to jump hoops a little bit, run it through a you know, browser extension that translates Japanese. The membership, you can pay through PayPal. It's 550 yen a month, which is roughly €5.
Great.
Bargain.
And yeah. For those €5, you get the entire archive that spans like past like more than 10 years into Ice Ribbon's history.
Wow.
Crazy. And so that's over 1,000 shows that you can watch. And eventually, all the shows get uploaded there. The big shows take about 2-3 months to get uploaded. And the smaller shows, maybe a month or a few weeks to get uploaded. But eventually, you do get everything. For people who cannot wait, so the ones who ate the first marshmallow, if you guys know the marshmallow test.
Yeah.
For people who cannot wait for the second marshmallow, we have a pay-per-view service, which is a live stream of the current shows. So you can watch the shows live or within the 10 days that the show happens. So it depends on the price. Like dojo shows are usually like 2,000 yen or €20. But if you're a channel member, it's like 1,005. It's like €15 for a dojo show. And the big shows are like €40 or 35 euros if you're a member. Yeah, so there are prices. But, you know, if you can wait a couple of months, you will eventually get the show with your membership.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay, good stuff. All right, that is how to watch. So for the show on Saturday, Reborn at Korakuen Hall, can you tell us a couple of the matches that we should perhaps be looking out for?
I'm actually taking a break from Korakuen Hall this time. I'll be working as staff.
Imagine there's a lot to do on show days.
There is, you know, like we pretty much do everything ourselves. So there's the ring setup and there's, you know, handling the merc table. And there's, you know, with Corona, you have to kind of herd the crowd. Yeah. There's a lot to do.
Yeah, like, again, going back to the kind of roller derby analogy, I remember helping to set up for bouts on bout days, just how it's like a full-on process, you know. So I imagine it's very, very similar, every little thing you have to do.
Yep, pretty much. And so I also have to, you know, I actually have a little bit of an injury.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I can fight, but our president's like, it's better if you don't. It'll never heal if you don't. Mm. So, you know, take a breather, just work a staff. You know, there are other matches you can fight. I'm like, all right. All right. So let's see. Well, the title match happening will be between Tsukasa Fujimoto and Ice Ribbon regular, Rina Yamashita. So Rina Yamashita is a hard-hitting deathmatch Amazoness. And she does a lot of match. Like, she's a freelancer who is a regular participant in Ice Ribbon. She has killer lariats. And she actually has beat Tsuka in the past two matches that she's had with her. It was tag matches, not singles, but she's been beating Tsuka. So it took us on this whole, oh my God, so how am I going to beat Rina Yamashita? And so this promises to be like a really good match. So she's a hoss and Tsuka's like a very flippy, manipulative wrestler. So you're going to see like two styles like really clash in the ring. So that would be interesting to see. We have a tag title match. So the International Ribbon Tag Championship title match. It's a mouthful. So it's between Maya Yukihi and Maika Ozaki. So they are members of the faction Rebel and Enemy versus Cherry, which is a very groundwork-based veteran wrestler and a freelancer, and Uno Matsuya. So they are from the unit Joint Army. So Joint Army is a unit that focuses on groundwork and submission moves.
Ah, interesting.
So this should be an interesting match because they're both like, judo belt holders. And then Maika Ozaki is pretty much like a hoss. Mm-hmm. And Maya Yukihi is, how would I describe her style? Lots of kicks, lots of strikes, but also a swanton. So
amazing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so it should be an interesting match because it's like you see very different styles in this match. And then we have Suzu Suzuki. So after Suzu Suzuki lost her title, she said that Tsuka Fujimoto asked her what do you want to do from now? And she's like, I want to do death matches. But we're not putting her into death matches just yet. She's going to be doing hardcore matches.
Okay.
Also because Ice Ribbon is very protective of their young wrestlers. Wrestlers under 20 cannot be involved in death matches.
That seems
That's
fair.
Probably for the best, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
And she is 18 years old.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah. Hardcore matches. So she's going through this trial. So it's a thing in Japan where you do a trial of seven. So years ago, Maya Yukihi did this. She had seven matches against seven senpais to grow her into a stronger wrestler. And so now Suzu Suzuki is doing the same thing. She's going to have seven matches with seven wrestlers. So the first wrestler she will be fighting is Yuko Miyamoto, so a male wrestler from 666 Pro Wrestling.
Hmm.
So should be interesting. You know, like Suzu Suzuki, this very flippy, flexible 18-year-old girl against this big deathmatch male wrestler, Yuko Miyamoto. So we're just going to see how much she can actually take, you know, on her road to someday doing death matches. So that should be an interesting match. So I think those are the matches to watch.
Gosh, yeah. No, that all sounds fantastic. I'm very, very excited for that match.
We're both really looking forward to this.
We are sold. Yeah.
There's so much good wrestling out there. And, you know, I always feel like I'm so behind on everything. And it's just like, oh, God, another excellent wrestling promotion I'm going to have to add to the lineup and always be struggling to kind of keep up to date with. But, no, very exciting to have more good wrestling.
The thing that Ice Ribbon does, we are like in the big shows, we really try to get a mix of, you know, different things to, you know, like there's like, you know, wrestling, everybody has a certain style of wrestling that we like. Mm-hmm. That, so, you know, we have like a kind of like comedy wrestling, and there's like hard hitting wrestling. There's more flippy, manipulative wrestling. And the opener is always a multi-man tag match. So, you know, there's like something for everybody. And yep. Also, we recently started last year, we introduced the Fantast Ice Belt, which is pretty much a belt where you can, you set the premises for the match.
Hmm.
So it's like, okay, for the next Fantast Ice Championship match, I want a death match. And next Fantast Ice Championship match, it will be an over-the-top rope match.
Ah.
And this time, it's going to be a weapons usage match.
Perfect.
Oh, very cool.
It's pretty much the, we can't really put this belt in one box, so it'll be an anything goes belt. While Risa Sarah has the belt, there's going to be weapons involved. Just like her weapons.
Amazing.
Nice. Okay, well, I suppose we should probably wrap this up there. That's very exciting. I'm very much looking forward to the show on Saturday. I know you've got some links online on the wonderful Ice Ribbon English Twitter account, which is incredibly useful. So if you're not following it already, please make a point of doing so, because it's very, very helpful to get you an entry point into Ice Ribbon. So we will certainly share the links of how to watch the show. And also there's a very cool trailer that's just dropped as well. So we will be sharing that one as well. Before you go, Yappy, is there anything you wanted to plug from yourself?
For myself. Well, I rarely ever plug myself, but there's the official Ice Ribbon Twitter, which is @IceRibbon_JP. And then there is the Ice Ribbon English Twitter that I run, which is @IceRibbon_ENG English. And then my personal Twitter is Yappy, spelled YAPI. And then if you like watching people draw, I have a Twitch channel. And the username is Yapitori, YAPITORI. So perfect. There you can watch me draw, you can chat with me, and I can answer questions about Ice Ribbon and tell stories about Ice Ribbon while I'm drawing.
Perfect.
Sounds like a good time to me. All right. Well, look, Yappy, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it. The Saturday show at Corican Hall. As I said, we'll be retweeting details on where you can watch that one. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then we'll be covering it on the show next week. So Ice Ribbon, we're here. We're loving it. We're excited.
And that was an absolute delight speaking to Yappy. Aww. You know, so grateful to have got to chat to her. We had a lovely time. Honestly, felt like we could have chatted to her all day.
Yeah, it was a really great stuff. Thanks again to Yappy and to Ice Ribbon, allowing her to come on to the show. And next week, we're going to be talking about Ice Ribbon Reborn from Corican Hall. Really, really excited about that one. Super pumped after Yappy has provided the hype. And we're also going to be talking about Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 5. Oh, yes. But listen, we didn't want to do either of these things alone, because, you know, the more the merrier. So we've been on the recruitment drive. So over on itrwrestling.com, we have a brand new writer in our midst who's going to be assisting on the Japan section, among other things. That's Beth Harris. Absolutely delighted to have Beth on board. She already writes for Last Word on Sports and the pro wrestling section, particularly about Tokyo Yoshi Pro, and does some absolutely great work there. So Beth is going to be joining us to talk about Ice Ribbon, as quite frankly, she knows a lot more about it than we do. So that's really good.
Handy to have someone on board that really knows their shit.
Definitely, definitely.
We're a kind of breadth kind of knowledge rather than a depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little about everything rather than a lot about any one thing at the moment.
That's it. And I don't think we should be ashamed of the fact that, you know, this is a new promotion for us, because, you know, hopefully if you're listening, this may well be a new promotion for you as well. So, you know, you can come on the journey with us. It just so happens that we've got the likes of Yappy and then next week Beth to help fill in the blanks and give us a bit more expertise and make it an all the more enjoyable affair.
Ice Ribbon Sherpas, if you will.
Indeed, absolutely. And then on to Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 5. Well, I mean, we could just talk about that, or we could rope in, if you like, a man who knows all about Bloodsport, who knows all about MMA, UFC. In fact, he lives just a few doors down from the UFC Fight Island. We are, of course, talking about that KJ guy who's going to be joining us to talk about Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 5. So super duper excited to have KJ on the show. Gareth and I have both done podcasts with KJ in the past. I've done Roped In, and I think you've been, is fortunate the word, enough to do the Pod of Thunder. And that's not a slight on the podcast, I should point out, but more the subject matter.
So for that show, I had to watch The Great American Bash 1999, and I honestly thought it was a rib. Like, I thought I wasn't actually going to be appearing on the show. or that maybe there was no show, because I don't know. And you know, it was like that was like the hazing, the initiation for new Inside the Ropes team members. You just have to watch the shittest show known to man.
It can't have been that bad. Was it really that bad?
My goodness.
I don't know.
If I've ever watched a worse wrestling show, I can't think of it.
Really? Is it that bad? That almost makes me intrigued to watch it.
Honestly, we're only a couple of weeks removed from recording. I can't remember one redeeming thing about the show.
Whoa, okay. Well, that is interesting.
It just failed on every single front.
Well, you know.
Thanks for that, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. But do check out Pod of Thunder on the Inside the Ropes Patreon if you get a chance to. It's a really fun listen. And the Wrestling Roast while you're at it as well. Ollie and KJ do a great job. It's really good fun.
They're good guys.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I've had the privilege of being on the Roped In podcast a couple of times with KJ talking about UFC. So I can vouch for this man's expertise in the field of mixed martial arts. And so I'm really intrigued to see how he interprets Josh Barnett's Bloodsport as a sort of hybrid between pro wrestling and MMA. So yeah, it should be a really fun show. Two different ends of the spectrum, which is what we like to do. So very, very excited about that.
They couldn't be more different shows, really, unless we were doing like a deathmatch show.
But do you remember we did that? We did Tokyo Yoshi Pro and then we did the Nick Gage thing last year. Which I'd like to repeat if humanly possible this year.
I'm really intrigued now to see the wrestler that Yappy was telling us about from Ice Ribbon that wants to wrestle death matches.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, well, that's all on Saturday. Join us here next week as we get to talk to you guys about that one again. Gosh, that's flown by, hasn't it? Well, at least I hope it has for you guys. It has for us. But thanks so much for joining us once again. So in the meantime, do join us on Twitter and Instagram at WrestlingPod. That's wrestling without the E. For all the links you'll need, you can head over to wrestlingpod.com. Again, wrestling without the E, so you can find us wherever you want to listen to us. Do check out itrwrestling.com for articles from myself, from Gareth, from Beth, and from all the team working on the Japan and elsewhere sections, as well as a couple of really interesting interviews that are on the way as well. And if you're looking for something a little bit more tangible, a little bit more tactile, then why not head over to InsideTheRopesMagazine.com, get yourself a freshly printed magazine with all that good stuff as well. Finally, if you're feeling cold, if it's winter where you are, if you're up in Scotland and you've got actual snow, then why not get yourself some merch? And by merch, we mean a wrestling podcast hoodie or a wrestling podcast mug with which you can fill with a hot beverage. Or if you're somewhere sunny, then why not grab yourself a wrestling podcast t-shirt like I did, which was foolish in February, but it's a really nice t-shirt and I'm pleased with it. You should have one. It'll be really good fun. Anyway, guys, that's us done for the week. Thanks so much for hanging out once again. And in the meantime, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the graps.